Welcome back to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Barr, and I'm so excited to share with you a conversation that I had with a family friend, Bruce Cleland, who is just an amazing individual. And I'm so excited for you to hear our conversation and all the wisdom that Bruce shared. So why I interviewed Bruce? Well, he is overall just an incredible human being, and he has such an interesting story, both from his career perspective and his life and family perspective. Bruce has been married for over 30 years. He started 4 companies, and as a business consultant, he's helped more than 25 entrepreneurs build their businesses. And Bruce is also the father to 2 amazing adult children who he and his wife, Nancy, flew halfway around the world to adopt. This story is really, really unbelievable. Bruce's stories in general will just have you on the edge of your seat. There's a cyclone involved in one of them. I mean, he shares some really, really incredible stories, and you're just going to want to be his best friend. He's an inspiring human, he's humble, and he still lives life in a way where he doesn't stay comfortable for very long, and he's constantly challenging himself to figure out his next adventure. He shares with us the insights on how to strike that elusive balance between work and family and adventure. And this is coming from somebody who really, really values family, but also has had an incredible career. It was such a pleasure to get to pick his brain, being a few years ahead of where myself and my friends are at in our parenting journeys, especially. I know you're going to get just as much out of this conversation as I did. So without further ado, enjoy. You're listening to the All Figured Out podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Barr. As a career coach for parents, a mom, an entrepreneur, and someone who spent 10 plus years in the corporate world, I still don't have it all figured out. And maybe you don't either. In this podcast, I'll share tools and strategies that I use with my clients. And in the many areas where I don't have things figured out, I'll be bringing you some amazing guest experts to help us fill in the gaps. So tune in each week as we explore how to make career and life decisions that truly work for you, your family, and your big goals. Let's make moves. Bruce Cleland, thank you so much for joining me on the All Figured Out podcast today. It is such an honor that you have agreed to come on this platform and speak with me today.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be here. I'm not just saying that. It's really cool to be reflecting on your life and trying to add value in interesting ways. So I'm still trying to figure it out. So somewhere along the way, we'll figure out the right balance between what I figured out and maybe some things I can help people figure out. But thank you for having me.
Well, you know, I mean, you have so much wisdom to share. And I want to start, let's just start with your career. Like, there's so much we're going to get into in our short time together today. You and I were joking that I'm going to have to rein it in terms of my questions. Who knows, maybe this will have to be a follow-up, or you'll probably be getting some LinkedIn messages after this. But Bruce, tell me, start with your career story and how that unfolded, and where are you from, actually? Like, start there too.
Born in Montreal. I grew up in Toronto, so I kind of think of Toronto as home. And then I moved out here in 91 and have been here pretty much on and off, except for a 10-year stint in Seattle. So, okay, my career, I'll take a mini step back.
Yes.
Because catalyzed my career. So if this helps. So I studied film at university.
And what university did you go to?
York University.
In Toronto. Cool.
And my high school happened to have a film program, and I was pretty good at it, and I got a scholarship, and I thought, oh, I'll go into film. And like a lot of people do. And by the end of my university education, I didn't really think that I wanted to be in film. I loved business. I grew up in it. Neighborhood with a lot of entrepreneurs, and I said, you know, I think I want to try and start my own business. So before doing that, I decided to go traveling and just shake it out, and I just was trying to figure it out. So I took every book I could think of on marketing and business, and headed to Australia. I was traveling with my girlfriend at the time, and we flew into Northern Australia and went diving and hung out, and we hitchhiked, and we got to Brisbane, which is a stunning city, but it reminded me a lot of Vancouver, and it just wasn't what I was looking for. I really needed to see different things. So, you know, have more of an interesting and unusual life. So we actually just got on a bus and literally went to the middle of nowhere. So, and like these, if anybody's seen Crocodile Dundee, like these little tiny 300 person towns with one hotel pub, we went to these places. We met interesting characters and moved along, you know, through all of the outback and up to northern Australia to a city called Darwin. And Darwin is a pretty significant place in terms of world history. It's sort of the center of Aboriginal culture. Mm. But anyway, we stayed there, we worked a little bit, met some people, bought a car, and we were going to keep traveling around Australia.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm putting up an ad looking for people to share gas with us. And a guy puts up an ad saying he's looking for people to crew on his boat back to the UK.
From Australia.
From Darwin, Australia. From
Darwin, Australia.
He's circumnavigating the world at that time. And he's like, yeah, he's looking for crew. And so I said, tell me what that means. Because I actually had never sailed before, ever. And so he kind of told me what was involved. And I said, I will sell or leave this car. I don't care. I really want to do this. And I'm traveling with my girlfriend. We were both tiny. It's like an extra set of eyes doing shifts. And I just really sold hard on, you want us on your boat. And so with no experience, he kind of said, all right, well, we'll give it a shot. That we were waiting for some parts in the marina. And he said, why don't we all live on the boat for a week until the parts get here and see what it's like? And I'm like, yep, no problem. Whatever he asked us to do, I was like up the mast. I was, you know, replacing a propeller and just said, this is it. So I'm getting to how my career started. So
I mean, I don't even care if we get to the career. This is riveting. I feel like I'm on the edge of my seat. I know you've lived because you're here, but like, keep going.
Okay, so we got on the boat and we start sailing. And we're in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and which is really mind-blowing when you think that like the ocean floor is miles below you at certain point. Like you can't get your head around these things, Andrea. Like, man, like the world, we just don't know, right? So to be in that, and we would be 8-10 days from land in any direction, like zero evidence of human life or light. And like stars were incredible, dolphins like exploding through phosphorescence at night, just a magical experience. So as we went along, we sort of hit some really bad weather, and we actually were in a tropical storm, a cyclone, for 5 days. So like movie stuff, like 100-foot swells, we took every sail down and we just had to ride it out.
So sails are down and you're just bobbing.
Totally. Yeah.
Gilligan just Island style.
Totally full on Gilligan Isle. Yeah. And so, so I guess one of the things is, and I guess a theme as I was thinking about our conversation is, you never know. Right. And so I have a theme of the best is in the bad sometimes. And it got me thinking of this, which is for some reason, Andrea, I got totally calm. I wasn't worried. I didn't know what would happen. Like I was looking for destroyed fishing boats. So we didn't, they didn't puncture our hull. And my job was to kind of keep those out. But I just got really calm and kind of developed this one life philosophy, which is sometimes you just got to be a cork in the ocean, right? Mm-hmm. Like you can do everything possible, but if it's not in your control, we controlled what we control, but it was just, I'm just going to love this. I'm just going to love this. And so it really taught me a lot, and it has stuck with me. And so we ended up getting off the boat in Sri Lanka. We for whatever reason, the crew at a certain point said, you know, one of the crew went back to Australia, one of the crew went. So the crew kind of broke up. And we ended up traveling for another 6 months and did all kinds of things, rented motorcycles and went up to Laos and Burma. Anyway, so we did a lot more adventuring. But again, through that time, I just had read everything I could about marketing. And I kind of felt like that was a good balance between business and creativity for me. I thought, okay, this is something that I can resonate with. So we came back and I decided to live in Vancouver. I didn't know anybody here. It just same thing. I was just like, I don't want any and I want to be unfettered, right? And so I just decided to start a marketing company. And I'd never worked in a marketing company, had zero agency experience. Like I really had no business doing it. It kind of goes back to the sailing thing, Andre, which is sometimes you also just got to step off the dock, right? Is like you just don't know. And it put me in this place of I'll just figure it out. And so I also tell people for any of your listeners that are thinking of starting a business, I really say passion and naivety are the most important attributes of entrepreneurs, like and people skills, because you need people to make things work. But you really just got to get going. And that's what I did at 25. I started my first business and just kind of clawed my way, like somebody would say something and oh yeah, I can do that. And so and there was, okay, this is really dating me, but there was no internet at the time. And I used to like run down to the library if you're in Vancouver at Burrard and Robson, and I would like look out how to buy television ads. And so I'd like just figure it out. So the good news about that is I figured everything out. Like I had to think about how to think about things. And I found that very invigorating and empowering. And it put me in a place where I started to think of things. And I think it was an advantage that I'd never worked at an ad agency or a marketing firm or anything, which is I didn't see everything through a marketing lens. I was like, why would you run ads if your staff are not being great with their customers? Like you clean up your house before you invite it. So it really helped. Anyway, so that's the first chunk of my career. I sold that business in 2000 to an internet company, of all things. And
No way.
So yeah, I sold that business, and then I had a condition of employment to be there for 2 years, and it was really interesting. I'd actually at that point I'd never worked for anybody other than like part-time jobs, so it was like okay, I have to go in, and I learned a little bit about corporate ecosystem. It was still a relatively small business, so I did that, and I did not enjoy it. In terms of, I didn't like the structure, right? Like it just really, I would say my career has been really about curiosity. Like if I was into something, I'd just go and find a client. So consequently, like I've marketed everything over my career. Like I would say everything.
What's the
So,
craziest thing you've marketed?
let's see.
Or the most weird niche?
I marketed a person that was interesting. I managed an IndyCar driver for a couple of years, and
What?
so that was marketing. And yeah, I named a district in a city. That was kind of neat.
Come on.
Then like basic stuff. I rebranded Cypress way back when Cypress, which was Cypress Bowl at the time. I created, co-created the world's first kind of adventure rally school in just outside of Seattle, where bought like a massive piece of land, and we had these state-of-the-art rally cars. It was on an old Weyerhaeuser, which is a large lumber company, original lumber company. It was on that property and had all of the original buildings, and we kept all the buildings. And so we made it like a video game. And so you would go through the forest, come out, hit dirt, hit gravel, go through these massive buildings that were like all shelled out. So that was a neat one. That was pretty fun. So And then I've done like fintech and insurance and, you know, all that other stuff.
Yeah. The more traditional route.
Yeah,
Bruce, what do
correct.
you think? What has, I mean, the experience it sounds like of traveling, probably it sounds like gave you so much confidence to be like, you can figure things out. Traveling in and of itself, even if you're not in a cyclone, I mean, that's an extraordinary situation, really gives you that that courage to be like, I can figure out how to get from point A to point B in a different country or whatever. But how do you, like, you know, for the person who's listening, who's like, I have so many ideas in my brain, I've always dreamt of being an entrepreneur. You said, you know, passion and naivety, like what else, could a person, you know, how might one get that confidence, maybe without traveling the world, say they're like a 35, 40 year old parent?
Yeah. So, I mean, the concept of side hustles, I think, is a game changer. Just understanding, like, okay, we have to pay the bills, and if you've got a family, like, you need something. But I think something that helped me and that I'm learning is you haven't failed until you stop. And so it doesn't matter if you do one thing or 10 things this afternoon on your business. It's when you stop that you failed. And I would say I've written well over 150 or 200 marketing plans, and they almost never turn out that way. Like, I, you know, early on in my career, hey, here's this big plan, and I would charge for it. And the world moves quite quickly, and you can start things on the side. And I think it's just starting and iterating, clawing towards something that's pulling you forward. Like, I think things that are self-propelling are, that's where magic is. It's like, I'm not sure that they're, and I'm doing one of these right now, like my next thing, which, you know, if we want to talk about, but my next thing is, I just feel like there's something there that I want to do. And I think I can make some money at it. I can sort of see a picture of it, and I can sort of see how I can make it transactional. But I'm just going to start working away at it. So I think for people who are sitting going, how do I get started? It sounds silly, but draw a circle and say, I think this is what I want to do. And then just start something, research it, just, you know, and then start learning and filling your brain with inspiration. And I think, you know, what I've learned is also critical is finding how to narrow your focus. And I've admired that about what you're doing, Andre, with your business and your coaching business, right? Is there's no shortage of coaches. And so, you know,
ain't that the truth?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so, you know, I see so many opportunities out there, but I think I've observed you found something you're passionate about, something that you can learn along the way. You know, like, you know, I think both of us relish in being maybe facilitators, not necessarily experts, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a nice way to frame yourself, where all I'm doing is I'm going to keep asking you questions. So I think kind of this circle concept and narrowing your focus, because now all of a sudden, if I know somebody with a family and a career, I can clearly say, you need to talk to Andrea. Like, she really gets it. And if she doesn't get it, she's going to help you get it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's very good. So I'd really encourage people to do that. Just, you know, throw a dart at the wall, step off the dock and start figuring out if there's a business there.
Yeah, that's such good advice, even for the person who's like, I have no entrepreneurial bone in my body or aspirations. But I think you're right, like something about that focus, even if you're like, when I talk to people who want to switch careers, and they're like, I had a woman who was, I tell the story often, who was a police officer, like, what you're picturing of police officer, and she wanted to be a teacher. And it was just those moments. And she's like, I've started to just, she really focused in, and she was like, she narrowed her focus, and all her, you know, extra time and thoughts went around figuring out how to apply for school, figuring out how to volunteer and put the move, like the motions in place to go after that. But it's true. If she was still kind of floundering around being like, oh, maybe I should do this. Oh, maybe I should do this. You're kind of getting nowhere if you're trying to do everything and trying to, So that's such great advice. And yes, I've heard a little bit about the new business idea. Touch on it briefly, because I think it's so beautiful, and you said, yes, I could monetize it. But I think for you, it sounds like even if $0 came of it, it sounds like a huge passion project for you. Tell me a bit more about that.
Yeah, you bet. So Yeah, and so a couple of things. I'm at a stage in my career where, you can kind of, pattern match the advice you give people, and it starts to get stale, right? And so there's so many new things happening that, because of the work I was doing, I wasn't keeping up with some of that stuff. So I buy a lot of social media, run campaigns, et cetera. So I really, over the last year, right now, I work as a fractional CMO, and I've been drawing my circles, kind of going, what am I passionate about? What do I like? What skills do I have? And so, what really resonated with me is helping people, and making just people feel normal and inspiring people to do their next thing, whatever that is. And so, I've decided I really want to build some sort of character-driven brand that just presents information. Going through a process right now where, like, I don't want another hug me brand. I want, like, you can do this. And it's not a, I'm trying to, and I'm thinking out loud as we speak, Andrea, because it's kind of the journey I'm on, which is I don't think I want to give cuddles, and I don't think I want to, tell people how to live their lives, but I want to find the intersection of life lessons that I've had that can get people to think, philosophies I've read that I find inspiring, books, and then just channel all of that through a character that maybe people will resonate with. Find a salt lick, if you will, which is this character that's really an access point to, oh, if I pay attention to this person, I might learn about stoicism, or I might learn about stepping off the dock and starting a business, or I might, this character's always getting me to think about how to live my best life without being preachy or anything. So that's kind of what I'm working towards. And yeah, I love it because it's going to challenge me to be do so many things. I've been a creative person my whole career, but I don't have any official training. But I'm like, I'm going to figure out how to, I'm not sure if I'm going to actually illustrate it, but it's like, I'm going to figure out how to do that. I'm going to figure out how to build an e-commerce store, and I'm going to figure out how to get a million followers. That's sort of in the back of my mind, which is, I'm going to figure out how to do that. And I really don't care how long it takes me, but it changes my mindset, which is, gamify it and make it interesting. So that's kind of where I'm headed. Stay tuned. And I've asked your perspective as I go through this process. I really, value your perspective on some of these things, because I think, you're a safe place for me to bounce ideas off as I'm getting going. So
Of
that's where I'm
course.
headed. That's where
I
I'm headed.
think that's so cool. Congrats on that. Even just, I can see that, yeah, I'm watching you on Zoom right now too, and I can just see the light in your eyes about it. And it feels like that's always where the best things are born from, is that sparkle. And yeah, I think people shit on the internet a lot. I think it's a cool place. Like, how cool that you would be able to bring a character to the world and touch somebody in Africa or Australia. Like, how cool is that? And from such a wonderful place, from such a wonderful heart that is yours. I mean,
No,
that's
thank
so
you.
cool.
Yeah. Well, same with you, right? I mean, it's just you have a voice that is also touching people in so many different places. And yeah, when it's very different, this localization is, not to get too far off track, but I'm working on a project. My client happens to be in Connecticut. I'm working with a marketing manager who I'm coaching, who's based in Iran, and we hired a designer who's based in Argentina. And I'm up at like 6 in the morning dealing with all these different time zones. But it's just like, I just wanted to do it because you can do it, it's the
Cool.
so yeah. But anyway, I think what you're doing is fantastic, and creating access points to different people and different perspectives is such a valuable thing that the internet's brought to people.
I agree, and thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Switching gears, Bruce, I want to hear about your journey. It through it all, you're a serial entrepreneur. I don't know if you even like that term, but you are an entrepreneur. You've started many businesses. You've done so many cool things. We could riff on that for ages, but in there, you had a family. You started a family as well. Tell me about the story around what it was like to become a dad and that journey through entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Okay, so when I had my business, my first business, married to an extraordinary person, so far out of my pay grade, league, whatever, just knocked it out of the park with my wife. We've been married for 30 years, but we wanted to have kids. It was one of the on my checklist when I first met her, and I went like, she's like going to be a 12 as a mom. So we tried to have children unsuccessfully for 4 years, and we explored all the other options. And we were successful in Nancy getting pregnant, but she miscarried, and it was devastating. And this has happened two times. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, and many people go through it. I mean, it really is a challenge. But you know, it's another example. We just changed our energy, and we said, do we want to birth a baby, or do we want to be parents? Let's just ask ourselves that question. And we decided we just wanted to be parents. So the miscarriage happened in October, and we decided we're going to figure out how to adopt a kid. And we didn't know anything about it. And Nancy started researching, like just full on hardcore researching. And then she would come and say, okay, this is how you do it locally. This is why don't we think about international adoption? Like, you know, it's a neat way to bring a family together. And okay, well, where do we do that? And so, you know, there's the, well, you can do China, Ukraine, and all these other countries that you can explore. So we actually went down to the library, and somebody had suggested there was a story, I think Nancy read in the paper, about people adopting a child from the Republic of Georgia in this former Soviet Union, which we didn't even know where that was or what it was in my naivete. In spite of all the travel, I really didn't understand where Georgia was. So we went and we read about it, and on paper, we fell in love with this country. Like, the people are extraordinary. It's where wine originated.
Such a good fact.
Yeah, right. It really is. And it's one of the original civilizations. They have their own language. They have their own alphabet, religious significance, cultural significance. The story that stuck with us is, if you get a flat tire on the road in Georgia, be prepared to stay with the people for 2 days. Because they'll feed you and love you, and you'll become fast friends. And we just said, you know, there's something about that that resonated with us. So we said, great, we're going to do that. We're going to figure out how to do that. So somebody locally in Vancouver had just set up, was just starting to facilitate adoptions in Republic of Georgia. And we were the first people to kind of go over there with her. And she was just, she's still such a dear friend, and she's from Russia, and she's a filmmaker and brilliant, and just adore Julia, but she really helped us figure it out. So, for those who haven't gone through adoption, it's non-trivial. It's pretty invasive. So you have to do home studies. We had to do five of them. You do them independently. You do them as a couple. What's your parenting style? Do you get mad at each other? You know, have you ever, you know, yelled at Nancy? Has she ever yelled at you? And you get really asked all of these, what feel like invasive questions, but they're actually fantastic, because you start to get clear, which is helpful. You know, I remember a few times through the process, Nancy and I said, you know, all parents should have to go through this a little bit.
I was just thinking that.
It's really good, you know, like, you just don't know. And so we still have lots of baggage, but you figure out all your baggage, your parenting baggage that you bring from your parents. And at least you can kind of see those things. So we went through this home study process, got everything in place. And so this happened in November, and in March.
November. This is like, you got on this fast.
Yeah, like wow. Right away.
And good so for you. Wow.
We were on a plane in March to Moscow, and they hadn't assigned a child. Our coordinator said, just get over there and we'll figure it out. So one thing I will share, which is another story for people, is advocate for yourself and be relentless in your passions. Mm-hmm. So our documents. I think touch probably something like 30 desks, because it goes from home study to Minister of Health to social services to the mayor to, and it moves around to all these desks. And Nancy would figure out the next desk it was supposed to go to. And she would find that person and say, "You're going to be getting a document from Peter Widget, and can you phone me when you've looked at it?" And she would get that person. Like, we had documents in Ottawa, and she's like, "Does anybody know anybody in Ottawa?" And she, like, you know, a friend of a friend lived there, and said, "Can you please go to find this person who works in this ministry, grab it, and FedEx it. We'll pay you to FedEx it." So,
and this is before social media,
right? Yeah. Yeah. We actually probably had to pick up the phone and dial numbers and everything when we could remember.
Phone books.
Yeah. Right. So, I say that for two reasons. It's one is when people talk about going through labor, I always say Nancy went through labor, like, not in a traditional way, but she worked her tail off to make this happen. And it still makes me emotional. Like, wow, that was just, we would not have children without Nancy doing this in the way. So
unbelievable.
And then the other part is just, like, you have to advocate for yourself, whether it's in business or a health issue or anything. And, you know, once we got clear, it all came together. It was fantastic. So we got to Moscow, and our coordinator phoned us and said, "There's a little boy. He weighs 4 pounds. We're not sure about, like, he's in a hospital, and but my go there and see." And we always were of the opinion, whatever the universe throws at us, doesn't matter. Like, boy, girl, whatever. We just said, it's going to be what it's going to be. So, yeah, we got to the Republic of Georgia. It had just separated from the Soviet Union, and it was a third world country when we got there. Like, there was no streetlights. We had power for maybe an hour a day, like, minimal food, minimal hot water. We weren't allowed to take the baby home with us. We had to care for it in the hospital every day. So we lived with a family who is just like family to us. And he would drive us to the hospital every day, and we would just take care of our baby. And like, the hospital used the same syringes on every kid because they just didn't have the money. So, you know, we went out and bought syringes, and I would try and sterilize the bottles. And I had, like, this little hot plate that it would take like 2 hours to get it to a boil. And the nurses there, who we became fast friends with, all of the nurses, would watch me boiling this water, kind of going, what is this guy doing? But, you know, we felt we needed to do it. And there was, you know, a time that somebody came into the hospital with, our son was quite ill at the time, just small, but, you know, kind of did the sign of the cross, and like, I hope he makes it. Anyway, it was another fascinating journey, and it worked out. We brought our child home, and we have just extraordinary memories from that whole experience. Another one of those best is in the bad, which is, can't imagine a more spectacular way to bring a child into the world. They're all spectacular. I'm not saying ours was better by any means, but phenomenal for us.
Absolutely.
And so then 4 years later, we decided to do it again. We adopted a little girl, Georgia, from Georgia. And that's how we put our little family together. And quickly, to tie it back to business, is what I did was I went to my three favorite clients and said, "We're going to do this. It's going to be lumpy. I'm going to wind down the business. And can I just do, I'll be like your head of marketing." And they were small businesses. And I just said, "I'll be your head of marketing, and I won't take on anything else." And all three of them said yes. So I had the support of these clients. I guess maybe it goes to just it really matters who you do business with for reasons you don't really always know. So, yeah, that's how we put it together. They were very supportive. They knew I was going to be away for, they thought I was going to be away for 2 weeks, which is what we thought, but there was all kinds of trauma and strife over in Georgia at the time. So it ended up being 5 weeks, but that's how we did it while I was starting, kind of running a business concurrently, as I found people who cared enough to help me make it work. I don't think I could have done it without them because we had just bought our first house. We didn't have the money to kind of go, hey, we're just going to go do this. And adoption is a bit expensive. That's kind of how it went. And then everything else worked out after that. It's all perfect.
Nothing left to
As
figure
you
out.
know, Andrea, as you know.
Oh my gosh, I have full body chills, and I knew bits of the story prior to this, but man, you and Nancy are just the coolest people. It just takes such special people to just go for it. Like, you really went for it. It just sounds like you guys go for it in all aspects of that phrase, pursuing, like, just changing your mindset, putting on that positivity lens and saying, okay, how can we find the best in this situation? And just going for it without hesitation. People could have, in so many instances of that story, I'm like, you could have quit right there. You could have quit right there. It didn't happen. Like, you weren't able to get pregnant. You could have quit right there, but you're like, no, let's keep going. Then, you're jumping through all these hoops of paperwork and everything. You could have quit right there. There's so many instances. You get there and your child is in the hospital and it's complicated and it's scary, and or they would have, I don't know. Oh my gosh, I could go on forever, but like, they could have been like, well, we have a kid in the hospital. You could have been like, eh, that seems hard. And I wouldn't fault anybody for shying away from that, but you guys were like, no, let's go for it. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I think it's, given your audience, your partner is you sort of do your vows and you say the words, right? But practical application is non-trivial when you're juggling all these balls. I mean, you guys are doing an amazing job with two young kids and doing great things with your life. Because you've got a good partner. And Nancy and I always sort of had this, she's operations, I'm sales and marketing in our lives. Like, okay, how much money do we need? You keep all the stuff in place. And then I also say she's management and I'm labor. So like, like if you need a tree planted, no problem, I'll do it. Just don't tell me how to do it. Right. Like I don't need help planting the tree. So we still have friction on a relationship, but that helped us understand like if it's operations, getting this thing done, do it. So I tend to be more risk tolerant and willing to try new things. And Nancy makes sure we don't drive right off the cliff, if you will. So, I think it goes to really understanding what your partner brings to the table. We have what I'll call the 40% karmic overlap. We make each other laugh all the time, and those things overlap and common values and things like that. But the other parts of us, it's just we wouldn't have the lives we have without each other. So it's really terrific to have found that. And I encourage people to. People say it all the time, don't sweat the small stuff. Like what it really pulled you, what attracted you to the person you fell in love with, and remind yourself of that. It's rarely looks in the long run as I look in the mirror. But it's who the person is. It's just fantastic. So
Yeah, and I like what you're saying about the know your hats and your strengths. Like, know what also lights you up. It sounds like Nancy's incredible at the doing the due diligence. Perhaps Bruce, you would have been like, let's just fly to Moscow. And she's like, maybe we should research this so we don't get thrown in jail.
Yes, we've done those sorts of things. When we travel, that's how we travel. I'm just like, so.
You're like, hey, I'm gonna pick the craziest spot, Nancy. You figure out how to do it.
Although we do have a trip coming up, which kind of ties into the story, if you're interested, which is we're going to Turkey and back to Georgia.
Oh.
And so our daughter, Georgia, is fascinated with Georgia and wants to learn more about it. And she has her birth name tattooed in Georgian characters. So she's really embraced it. Our other child, not so interested, so married and living that life. So we just decided, if she wants to go to Georgia, we're gonna go to Georgia as a family. So we're doing that in a couple of weeks, so a week actually. And we've reached out to try and see if we can connect with any of her birth family, which is non-trivial to do, but we're gonna go and try and see what we do. So that's, I guess, that's our next adventure, is taking Georgia to Georgia and just doing that. So kind of where it came from is I usually plan everything, and this one I kind of said, we said, Nancy and I said, Georgia, you do whatever you want to do in Georgia, we'll do whatever. So she's built this extraordinary itinerary of all the things that she's curious about.
Oh,
So
that is so special. And you said Georgia is at this point 23. Did you say
correct. yeah
23?
yeah
Oh my goodness. What a that's a really cool time, I feel like, to go. I just feel like you and I before this were just talking about the 20s, and you're just, man, you're an adult. I remember thinking when I was in my 20s, like, I'm an adult, but I'm not. I feel like a child, but I'm supposed to be an adult. Some of my friends act as adults, some don't. It's a funny time, but what a cool, I think it's a very formative time too. So what an interesting time for her to go and have the wherewithal and know what she's super curious about and be open to those experiences. And
Yeah.
now I have to ask also, was the experience with adopting Georgia kind of similar, or was it, did you kind of learn quite a bit from the first, from your first child, and when you went back, you kind of knew a bit more what to expect, or how did that go?
Yeah, good question. It was different. So, our son we adopted, and it looked after in a hospital. And so, and it was a very long process, and we had to stay there the whole time. With Georgia, they actually changed the protocols, and we adopted her at 2 months. We had to go over there, go through the entire process, and that only took about a week or 10 days. And then we came home, and then they did a lot of paperwork. But during that time, she actually stayed with a foster family. And so then, once everything was completed, we had to go back over and bring Georgia home. So,
Oh, wow.
so it was very, very different, I guess, in a way, a little less stressful. But as soon as you see, that kid, you just want to wrap them up and take them home. So, so that was interesting. When the adoption came through and Georgia was able to come home, we actually arranged for somebody who happened to be in government who was going to London. We said, like, we'll pay for your airfare. Can you bring Georgia to London with you? And Nancy flew to London. So literally, Nancy like went to London, grabbed our daughter, turned around and came home in like a 22-hour period or some insane like that, 24-hour period or something insane like that. So
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. That is so crazy. I have to ask now, because you have a 23-year-old and a 27-year-old, I believe you said, you were ahead of the, I mean, I have a 2.5-year-old and a 5-month, like a 0-year-old. How have you, I have to ask, how have you navigated a continued career, both yourself and Nancy, raising two wonderful children? What wisdom do you have for those of us in this stage of life, or how did you navigate it all?
Lumpy, quite frankly, just like really lumpy. Like I had stressful years and I didn't feel like I was in my own head too much, because I worked with an entrepreneur who once said, having your own business is as close as a man can ever get to having their own baby. It's just like you're eating, sleeping, feeding, you can't not think about it. So not to be disrespectful to birth versus a business, but I went through the periods where I was really just, I felt like I had to be consumed with business. But I think role division of kind of who's going to carry what load and then being there. So it was kind of like, especially when the kids were young, Nancy would shoulder the load, but I would say 3 nights a week, like I'm on night duty 3 days a week. So she always knew she could, get a rest, like there was an end in sight. So we kind of tried to break up the patterns if you will.
Yes.
And, you know, I was fortunate, like, because my clients knew and cared, I would, you know, take our son to work with me in the early days. And so that helped navigate things. But the, you know, I think that probably the biggest thing is, and I'd say I think I learned this a little too late, which is, you know, I think I said it, but I didn't practice it, which is kids are not vessels to be filled, but candles to be lit. And, you know, and even on, you know, this podcast, I think I do have a lot of perspective and insights and good stories and things like that. But we worked hard to try and draw out who they were. And early on, that I don't think I was as good at that as a parent. Like, you know, it's like, because you're this, you're kind of like, oh, I'm the adult, I'm the teacher, I'm the parent. And, you know, I think when I started to turn that on its ear, is when I had more, I'll say more fun as a parent, not doing parent things, but they became, you know, I looked for who they were and tried to create access points to them, for them, into whatever. Like, you know, I didn't care what sport they play. I didn't, I stopped. I didn't want them to be me. and you start off, that's all you know. So,
so you're talking more like opening doors for them, or they have an interest in dinosaurs and you're like, cool, let's get the book from the library on let's learn together about what that is all about. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it's more along parallel learning and parallel exploration versus teaching, or because I think most parents will, hey, you like dinosaurs, let's go get dinosaurs, to a dinosaur book. And, you know, that's a natural evolution of things. But, you know, probably a more profound example for me, I think, which is probably, you know, really, it might be valuable, really valuable for your listeners. And that is, my son was like a hardcore gamer. And I wasn't, right? Like we had video games as I was growing up, but, you know, just brilliant and consumed with gaming. And, you know, we went through a stage where, stop it, like many parents, like life isn't about gaming. And we would get angry at gaming. And it became this friction point as a parent. So it was really difficult. And then one day I decided to sit down and see what was it? And so, because when they were little, I'd like play putt-putt on the computer together, or, you know, whatever little kind of fun games there were. But, you know, every now and then I'd be asked to play, but I'd be in a corner jumping up and down while, you know, all of his friends are collecting, you know, ammo and treasures and everything. And I, you know, he's like, Dad, like, you're in the corner, turn around. So I couldn't play. So I just dismissed it at a certain point. But the quick story is, and I got this advice from somebody, and that said, try and get your kid to teach you the game and just watch them. And it actually turned into a project with this person where we actually built a fairly significant website to teach parents how to game with their kids.
Of course you did. Of course you did. That is so cool. That is so cool.
But, you know, I sat down and I realized there's two monitors going on, and one of them's filled with Wikipedia, where, you know, there's a lot of learning going on in one monitor while there's gaming going on in the other. And it's like, well, I want to figure this out so I can be better at game. It's like, we go to get some music. It's like, oh, can I buy the soundtrack to this game? I heard this song on. I'm like, wow, this is actually an access point to all kinds of things that I thought it was buried. And, you know, like just this cave of a kind of detachment, right? And it really wasn't. It was an access point in a way that was meaningful. And, like, you know, having friends in, you know, I talked to my friend Utgar in Sweden, and I'm like, I never had a friend from Sweden when I was, you know,
modern day pen pals.
Exactly right. So I guess the quick story there is gaming and technology is a big part of our lives. Actually, Trent, if you can figure out a way to enjoy it or be part of it, it's I learned a lot through that as a parent. And
Wow.
I'll quickly say one thing. Years ago, there was a book called Future Shock. And so this was like in the 70s. I'm dating myself a bit, but the book said, one generation before my kids will be the first generation that starts to know more than their parents and will start teaching their parents things. Because previous to that, all of the generations were saying, okay, this is how you go to school, you get a university education, you get a good job. And there was this pattern that you fall through. And if it was an agrarian society, it was like, this is how you plant crops and you do all these things. And now it's like, parents can delegate IT to their kids, and they can teach you things, and it is really the first generation to do things. Like I've said to Georgia for this trip, can you figure out all the eSIM stuff, and can you look after all these things, and let your kids teach you things. It's good for them and it's good for you.
That is really unique wisdom. I feel like I've not yet really contemplated that. And I mean, I guess I'm still kind of in the early days, but yeah, it's so, wow. I didn't even think about how interesting that that book was written in the 70s as well. And they were, prophesizing what's for sure happening now. And how nice is that? I wonder if that's like, kind of nice for a parent to be like, huh, great. One less thing for me to have to figure out, and how cool that instead of having to look it up in an encyclopedia, get my kid to teach me, like tables turn, like that's pretty cool. And I mean, there's no better way to kind of solidify your learning or feel proud about something than getting to teach somebody something. It's like this platform, like we all live in our own experiences and we're like, what? Who wants to hear this? But then we record an episode like this, and I have no doubt people are going to reach out and be like, holy crap, that was profound. And you're like, what? This is just These are just my thoughts. Oh, that's so cool. Bruce, what are you? This is such a, I mean, what a wonderful story. What a wonderful career you've had. You were a great person. I could go on, but what would you say these days? What are you still trying to figure out?
Really good question. So I think kind of what I touched on earlier, which is I'm trying to figure out what my next sense of purpose is. My father always said you need to love, be loved, and have a sense of purpose.
Wow.
And I could build another thing similar to the thing I've built. And so I think I've woven in more of how I want to help people and into to this. So I want to figure out what are the different ways I can do that without, like, I don't want to preach. I don't want to, like, I literally still feel like I'm figuring it out. Like, anybody who's listening, please do not interpret this that I know what I'm doing. The so th that I think that's what's next for me and what I'm trying to figure out, which is, how do I blend my skills into a way that adds more value to the planet? It's and it's interesting and fulfilling. I've sold lots of things. I've helped sell lots of things, so it's fun to think about. I'm really working hard not to think of this purely as a commercial venture, which is where my mind goes.
There's a yin yang to it, right? There's an art and a
Totally,
science
yeah. But I don't
to
know
these
which
things.
is the yin and which is the yang, but there's more yin in this one than there is yang or
Yeah. The
something.
creative is the yin. Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, I think it's fun to not, I mean, you said I don't have anything figured out. I think life will become very boring if and when that happens. So you seem like a lifelong learner to me as well. Someone who is always going to be wanting to learn something new and pursue something different. And
I think people say curiosity is important, but it really is.
well, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story. And it's, oh, you're just so inspiring, and I'm so excited to see where this new business venture or creative venture takes you, and follow along and support in any way I can. I'm really excited for you. So thank you so much again for coming.
Yeah, my pleasure. And I so enjoy watching you doing what you're doing. I just think it's great. And for those who don't know, Andrea's husband is my nephew, who I just adore. And I think he's found an extraordinary partner in you. You guys really complement each other well. And I think you've got that figured out.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thanks, Andrea. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. You can access all resources mentioned in this episode via my website, andreabarr.com/podcast. And let's chat on Instagram. I'm at Andrea Barr Coaching and I reply to every DM I get. If you loved this episode, don't forget to quickly hit that button on your podcast app to give me a 5-star rating and drop in a review. It would truly mean the world. And if you're like me and love to share things that you love, send this episode to a friend who you think would appreciate this topic. Thanks again for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.